ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Nectar of Instruction, Text 5. Krishna, Krishna, iti yasya giri tam manasa adriyeta diksha asti chet pranativi cha bhajantam isham Sushushaya Vajna Vigyam Ananyam Anya Ninda Adi Shunya Ridam Ipsita Sangha Labhya Krishneti Yasya Giritam Manasadriyeta Dikshasti chat praniti vishta javajantam isham. Shushushaya bhajana vigyam ananya anya. Nindari shunya ridam ifsita sangalabhya. Krishneti yasya giritam manasadriyeta Dikshasti chat praniti vishta javajantam isham Shushushaya bhajana vigyam ananyanyam Nindadi shunya ridam ifsita sangalabhya. Krishna, the holy name of Lord Krishna. Iti, thus, yasya, of whom, giri, in the words of speech, Tam, him, manasa, by the mind, adriyeta, one must honor, diksha, initiation, asti, there is, chet, if, pranativi, by obeisances, cha, also, Vajuntam, engaged in devotional service. Isham, unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Shushushaya, by practical service. Vajanavigyam, one who's advanced in devotional service. Ananyam, without deviation. Anya ninda adi, a blaspheming of others, etc. Shunya, completely devoid. Ridam, whose heart. Ipsita, desirable. Sangha, association. Loved ya by gaining. Translation. One should mentally honor the devotee who chants the holy name of Lord Krishna. One should offer humble obeisances to the devotee who has undergone spiritual initiation diksha and is engaged in worshiping the deity. One should associate with and faithfully serve that pure devotee who has advanced in undeviated devotional service and whose heart is completely devoid of the propensity to criticize others. Nama Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthai Budhaya Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Saraswatam Deve Gauravani Pacharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatya De Sudharna. Prabhupada explains in the purport that the process of Krishna consciousness is to increase the loving exchanges between devotees, which is given the word in the previous verse, prithi, didati prithi guyati, didati prati grinati, guyam akiti prichati, bhunte bojayate chaiva, shadvidam prithi lakshana. So prithi is the affection or the state of love. As Tesham Siddhatam Yuktanam Bhajantam Priti Purvakam. So that enthusiastic feeling, that inspiration comes principally in the association of devotees. So how to cultivate that inspiration in devotional service in the association of devotees depends upon putting our love in the proper way to the proper persons. Just like if you want to make an investment, that you want to invest in such a way as that you get back a good return. If you put your money in a worthless stock and you wind up with zero at the end, then you may be a little disappointed. So here there's an analysis given to help us know how to properly honor the Vaishnavas so that we're able to give them our devotion in such a way as to remain inspired in devotional service and make tangible progress. Since devotional service depends upon, or anything else depends upon, association, one should choose that association which is most likely to elevate us in devotional service. So the different types of devotees are divided into three classes, namely Kanista Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari, and Uttama Adhikari. And as will be explained, the purpose of doing so is to know how to positively serve the devotees. Even the Kanista Adhikari, although his symptoms may be sometimes less than desirable, because we'll find in the scriptures that usually when there's problems, it's always assigned to devotees with a Kanista Adhikari mentality. Therefore, sometimes it may appear that Kanista Adhikari is less than a desirable position to be in. And it's defined in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam as Archam Eva Hariye Pujam Yakshariye Hate Yata Daneshu Chanyeshu Sabhakta Prakrita Smritaha. That the neophyte devotee is more or less on the materialistic platform. He is the advanced Brahmin in the four classes of persons who are aspiring for devotional service, namely the persons who are artha arthis, the distressed, to those who are artis, those who are desiring for economic advancement, those who are jignasu, and those who are gyanis. Jignasu meaning inquisitive, and gyanis, those who are searching for knowledge. The gyani, the topmost gyani, who's a Brahmin, that he's the Kanista Adhikari. So from the material point of view, the highest person in the material world is the lowest person on the spiritual platform. But even that is not such an ordinary position. In other words, we shouldn't think that if someone is a bona fide Kanista Adhikari, that it's such a bad position in one sense, although we tend to demean it. Because it's the highest position in the material world. If one can factually be a bona fide Brahmin, then he's quite elevated, even from the position of its spiritual advancement. He's ready to transcend and enter into the spiritual world. It's a pretty good position. But we find that familiarity breeds contempt. But if one goes on Sankirtan, for instance, on book distribution, and meets Mr. Ordinary on the street, then he can begin to appreciate much more what the devotees are like. You see how bewildered and degraded the ordinary person is. And then when you see even the most insignificant devotee, you can appreciate how advanced and elevated they are. So the purport is that the Kanisadhikari, he should also be shown respect. That if one doesn't show even the Kanisadhikari respect, then it's not possible to make advancement in devotional service. Therefore, he should be shown respect, because our main business is to fix our minds on Krishna. And in order to fix one's mind upon Krishna, therefore, one has to see things in relationship to Krishna. So if one cannot see the Kanisadhikari in relationship to Krishna and show him respect as the super soul, because the super soul is dwelling in his heart, and therefore he's actually somewhat, to some degree, an instrument for the super soul. Therefore, how will it be possible to be able to show other living entities respect? It will be very difficult. Just as we come into the temple here and we bow down before the deity because the deity is here. An ordinary building we don't go into and bow down. Generally, if the devotees are going door to door, they don't knock on people's door and then bow down to people's buildings. But because the deity, Radha Gopinatha, here, therefore we pay obeisances. Similarly, a devotee who's a little elevated, he can understand how the deity is in everyone's heart. Therefore, everyone is worshipable just as much as a temple. The deity in the temple is worshipped. So the most advanced devotee, he pays obeisances to all living entities. But for preaching work, it would be a little difficult. Because it'd be hard to get the books out if you were down on the ground all the time. Besides that, people would step on you. So the devotee usually takes the position of a Madhyama Adhikari, and a Madhyama Adhikari discriminates. So verse 5 gives us the discrimination of the second level of devotee, in which he can judge who's on what platform. So some judgment has to be there, because without making some judgment, you can't make any discrimination. Without discrimination, you don't know what to do. And if you don't know what to do, you can't make any advancement, because you won't do anything. Therefore, one has to go beyond the third level of devotional service to be able to discriminate. Because although a Brahmin may have knowledge about Brahman, he has little experience with devotional service. He may see all living entities equally, but that seeing all living entities equally on the Brahman platform, knowing that everyone is a spiritual being, is not sufficient to know how to properly discriminate who's on what spiritual platform. So the Brahmin, he at least has some spiritual vision, but his discrimination on the spiritual level is not very advanced. So one has to come to the Vaishnav platform. And the second level of Vaishnav, the Madhyama Adhikari, that's just the beginning of Vaishnav platform. So he can see, as it says, Ishvare taradineshu balisheshu dvitsatsu cha prema maitri kripo peka yet karoti samadhi maha. So he sees four different categories. He sees Krishna, but he tries to love Krishna, prema. He knows that the goal is not to get something from Krishna, but to love Krishna. And he sees the devotees and he tries to make friendship with the devotees. Generally in the material world, there's always enmity between those who are equal. Because the material world means basically a fight for sense gratification. So if someone's equal, then you're generally even more aggressive. Because people who are more superior to you, you feign as if you're their friend. so they don't do anything, any harm against you. And for those who are inferior, just completely wipe them out before they get a chance to get equal with it. You know. So for those who are equal to you, generally there's the greatest animosity and envy, because they're the close. Therefore, you're not really so sure whether or not you can be more powerful than they are. So we find that when people are close, just like between the Muslims, there's two major groups, the Sunnis and the Shunites. I'm not so familiar. Anyhow, generally, even between persons who are fairly close philosophically, the greatest enmity arises. So similarly, those who are equal, one tries to make friends with them. And those who are Bali Sheshu, those who are beginning devotional service but not very advanced, you try and elevate them. Those who have potentiality to become devotees, you try to inform them and help them make advances in spiritual life. And those who are dvitsatsu, or envious, upeksha, one tries to neglect them or avoid them. So the second class platform, as is explained here, this is the platform which is necessary so that one can actually make advancement in spiritual life. From the Brahminical platform, you can find out that there's such a thing as spiritual life. In other words, the Kanista Adhikari is one who has a fairly good idea that there is such a thing as spiritual life, but he has no clear conception how to advance in it. He just has some faith that it exists. That's generally called Shraddha. At the beginning, with some faith, one can chant the holy name. He has faith that it's a good thing to do. He doesn't really have very much experience what he's going to get from it, but he tries to do it anyhow. And beyond that, generally when one comes to the higher platform, then he not only has faith of what the chanting will do for him, but it actually does something for him. So the neophyte devotee, he's generally on the platform of nama aparad or nama bas, or nama aparad, and the second level devotee is nama bas. He's not chanting pure name, but when he chants, he's actually getting an effect from it. Therefore, he has something to preach about. If we chant the holy name, and it's just like, you know, some letters in the alphabet, you know, shnik shnik, ram ram, day, we do 16 rounds of that, then we will go out and preach and tell everyone, yeah, this is wonderful. I'm sure it is wonderful. I don't know why it's wonderful, but everyone else tells me it's wonderful. I'm sure if you can chant it, you'll get something from it. Although I've been doing it for 20 years, and I can't quite figure out what it's all about myself. In other words, the chanting, when one is actually getting an effect from it, then one is inspired to preach. But on the other hand, in our society, we're encouraged to preach even when we don't get such an effect. Why is that? Because if we preach enthusiastically, then we'll become convinced that I should try and do it in such a way as to get an effect. In other words, by preaching about it, then we convince ourselves. And it helps us improve our chanting. Because we hear ourselves preaching, and generally when we hear our own voice preaching, we become very attracted. And we think, well, that must be true. I'm saying it. Therefore, the person who gives a class, he usually makes advance in because he convinces himself it must be true. In any case, the second class devotee, he's generally on the Namabhas platform, that he's getting an effect. And the first class devotee, he's Shudanam, or Bhavanam, or Premanam. He's completely overwhelmed by the effect, so much so that he can't preach, because on that platform he sees everyone else is more advanced than he is. Not that he doesn't discriminate. In other words, the chanting, when one is actually getting an effect from it, then one is inspired to preach. But on the other hand, in our society, we're encouraged to preach even when we don't get such an effect. Why is that? Because if we preach enthusiastically, then we'll become convinced that I should try and do it in such a way as to get an effect. In other words, by preaching about it, then we convince ourselves. And it helps us improve our chanting. Because we hear ourselves preaching, and generally when we hear our own voice preaching, we become very attracted. And we think, well, that must be true. I'm saying it. Therefore, the person gives a class, he usually makes advancement because he convinces himself must be true. In any case, the second class devotee, he's generally on the Namabhas platform, that he's getting an effect. And the first class devotee, he's Shudanam, or Bhavanam, or Premanam. He's completely overwhelmed by the effect, so much so that he can't preach because on that platform he sees everyone else is more advanced than he is. Not that he doesn't discriminate. I mean, he has discrimination, but his discrimination is a little different. He can understand clearly who's on what level. He sees everything perfectly well, but he just thinks that everyone else is on a higher level than he is. Therefore, it's very difficult for him to preach because he thinks everyone else should preach to him. But it's not that he's like completely bewildered and can't see. He talks to the trees or something like that. He may talk to the trees, but maybe if you're on that platform, they give an answer. Just like there was one devotee, Murari Chaitanya Das. He'd go into the forest, and he would play with the poisonous serpents on his lap. And he'd find tigers and slap their faces. So on that level, you know, maybe they do reciprocate. But in any case, here it says that the proper way of cultivating devotional service is from the second class platform. So we should aspire to come to the second class platform. So Prabhupada says that this Krishna consciousness movement is so nice that everyone, regardless of what their position is in the material world, is encouraged to take part in it and therefore come to the platform of real Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada says, when we see someone's actually interested in Krishna consciousness and wants him to be initiated, and wants to be initiated, we accept him as a disciple for the chanting of the holy name. And then he gives, throughout this particular purport, he gives many different examples of what it means to be on what level of consciousness. When a neophyte is actually initiated and engaged in devotional service by the orders of the spiritual master, he should be accepted immediately as a bona fide Vaishnava, and obeisance there should be offered unto him. So the neophyte devotee is one who just begins to chant the holy name. But when he's actually seriously engaged in following the orders of his spiritual master, we should understand him to be somewhere in the second class platform. And then, when he's strictly following all the rules and regulations, chanting a prescribed number of rounds and japa beads, and always thinking of how to expand the Krishna consciousness movement, such a Vaishnava should be accepted as an Uttama Adhikari, a highly advanced devotee, and his association should always be sought. So somehow or another, Prabhupada, he's very positive in these purports. That many people try to take it apart and try to analyze in such a way as so that you'd think that there was no one in our society who could possibly be more than a Kanishtha Adhikari at best. If you were very generous and you would assign them the qualification of a Kanishtha Adhikari, out of your generosity, of course. But factually, in the purport, if one reads it carefully, one will find out that it's quite encouraging. In other words, there's no harm, generally, in giving a person more credit than he actually deserves. Especially if he's a devotee. But there's great harm in giving him less credit than he deserves. So Prabhupada gives some general instructions, information, so that we can learn how to appreciate the devotees. The first thing is that if just one aspiring to be initiated, he's accepted as Kanishtha Adhikari, which is the topmost position of the material world. And that may surprise us, but factually, if you go out and you meet, as I've mentioned, if you meet most people in the material world, you'll find out that it is pretty rare for anyone to have any interest at all, serious interest, in spiritual life. 99.9% of the people are out shopping the whole day. And the other part of them are out working to make the money so that they can go and shop. And if someone comes along and they're actually interested in spiritual life, that even on book distribution, generally you don't believe them at first. It's such a person. You have doubts whether they're trying to put you on. And then it's like an oasis in the desert. So what to speak of someone who's serious enough to want to be initiated and to try and make spiritual progress? It's practically, even the karmis can't believe it could be true. And then out of those who stay around long enough to actually seriously carry out the orders of the spiritual master, you know, after like 25, 30 years of doing it, and someone says, well, I don't really think the person is sincere or serious. You know, after he's 60 years in the movement and on his deathbed, and the person goes, well, he might have been serious, but, you know, I had my doubts. I'll give him some credit. In other words, one has to give some credit to someone who's actually seriously engaged in following the orders of his spiritual master. He probably could have done something else with his life. You know, there's probably were other material opportunities. If he was a materialist and he wanted to exploit something, there was probably other opportunities rather than living as a monk for 30, 40 years. He was really into becoming the lord of the material world. And then, if one is actually found to be very seriously engaged in the service of the Lord and strictly following all the regular principles, chanting the prescribed number of rounds of japa beads and always thinking of how to expand the Krishna consciousness movement, such a Vaishnava should be accepted as an uttama adhikari, a highly advanced devotee, and his association should always be sought. So even there, sometimes we find that too many devotees will have to be included in this category. But that's what it's like. That if we find someone who's actually serious about devotional service, then there's no harm in thinking he's an advanced devotee. Because as soon as we see that, then we'll become inspired also to follow his example. And if he has a good example, then what's the harm? And if we think, well, if I give him too much credit, he'll get puffed up and fall down. You know, then with that mentality, then I'll never make any advancement myself because I'll be afraid if I get too advanced, I'll become puffed up and fall down. So then there's no hope for anyone becoming advanced because everyone should always remain on the first or on the third or second class platform so they don't become puffed up and fall down. But that's not actually true. That everyone should very carefully chant their rounds. Everyone should follow all the regular principles, all the principles, and everyone should try to expand the Krishna consciousness movement as much as possible. And if someone comes along and says that you're an advanced devotee, then you don't have to accept it. But the person who thinks that you're an advanced devotee, then he'll make advancement by thinking like that. So this is mostly meant so that we can appreciate the devotees according to how much they're seriously engaged in devotional service. It doesn't mean that everyone should go around and declare that, you know, I'm an uttama adhikari, but it means that we should appreciate those who we see as advanced according to these criteria. Now, as far as some kind of mystical criteria, you know, the devotee has to come in my dream at night and display his effulgence or his gopi, you know, his gopi identity or something, and then I'll have some faith. You know, that's not the criteria. The criteria is practical engagement in devotional service. And that's used by the word sushushaya in this verse, which has the import of not only hearing, but being serious enough to follow the instructions of what we've heard. So if we not only are hearing nicely, we'll be manifested in our practical activities. So when it's heard nicely, then he practically follows, and by such hearing and following, then he certainly becomes advanced. So, the initiation is explained a little further on. Diksha kali bhakta kari atma samarpana, se kali krishna tari kari atma sama. That at the time of initiation, when a devotee fully surrenders to the service of the Lord, Krishna accepts him to be as good as he himself. So this explains that initiation is not something just formal. It's actually, it's a process of surrender. Where the next verse says, divyam jnana tato dadya, kuryat prapasya sankshayam, tasmat dikshayati sa prokta, deshi kais tatva kovidai. By diksha, one gradually becomes disinterested in material enjoyment and gradually becomes interested in spiritual life. This is from the Sandarbha by Jiva Goswami, which is actually divya jnanam tato dadya, which means that the transference of divine knowledge, divya jnan, yato dadya, the giving, kurya prapasya sangshayam, which destroys sinful life, tasma dikshesi saprota, is called diksha. By all the persons who will learn it. In other words, by diksha is the process by which I become receptive to transcendental knowledge to such an extent that I perform devotional service and it takes away my sinful activities and establishes me on the spiritual platform. So then Prabhupada explains what is the criteria for diksha, that it's not simply a ceremony, but it's actually it's a consciousness. So the qualifications are given here by Prabhupada. The first one is that one should be so much disinterested in material life that he's willing to live in the association of devotees and tolerate whatever inconveniences he has to go through just as long as he can engage in some practical service and hear about Krishna. So that's quite a surrender, factually, to be able to tolerate the association of persons who you may not be materially compatible with. Just so that you can make spiritual progress. So this is the proof that the Krishna consciousness movement works. One proof is the fact that the devotees are able to give up sinful habits, follow the four regular principles. Unless they were getting some higher taste, how can they give up the four pillars of sinful life? Since everyone in the material world lives simply to enjoy sense gratification, so if one gives up the basic pillars of sense gratification, he must do it for some purpose, for some other goal. So that other goal must be of some higher taste. So that higher taste must be something spiritual. We can see that in the beginning, when the devotees first start to appear in the Western world, people thought they were just hippies. Matter of fact, I remember many people thought that we were in fraternities in America, then they had certain rites. You had to do something very strange. Do they have that here, fraternities? They have that here, and they have to do something really weird in order to. So they thought that we were members of fraternity doing something really strange. What's that? Initiation? Initiate, yeah. I know it to be initiated. So they were right. We were trying to be initiated. And we were doing something to them which is quite unusual. I remember I went out one time in Dallas in 1972, I think, or 71. And at that time, Sesrup Maharaj was our temple president. Actually, he wasn't our temple, he was our GVC. And we all went out on book distribution, but it was like the first time we were just beginning to experiment with door-to-door. So as soon as we went out, we were all someone called the police and we were all arrested. And her testimony to the police was that these were men impersonating women going door-to-door. Because they never saw anyone with a dhoti before. So, so she, luckily she didn't show up at the trial. They just let us off. But people could not understand what we were doing. But this is the seriousness of the devotional of the devotees, is that they're willing to undergo different types of austerities because they must be getting some other experience or taste. And for the advancement of spiritual life, the Srimad Bhagavatam recommends tapasya brahmacharyena samena cha dhamena cha tyagena satya socha abhyam emena niyamena va. The first qualification is that one should be willing to undergo tapasya, to go through some austerity. And the tapasya tapo divyam putra kayena sadvam tasma brahma sokyam tunandam purifies one's heart. So in this age, the principle of tapasya is chanting 16 rounds. Not so hard, but that's most people's tapasya. Maybe especially at night when we have rounds left, then it becomes more of a tapasya. But it is a tapasya. Tapa means to heat up. So more or less in our usual colloquialism, we say to get into the fire of spiritual life and get out of the fire of material desire. So this is a tapasya. By such tapasya, one gets into the fire of spiritual enthusiasm, and his enthusiasm to engage in sense gratification diminishes. And then one can follow celibacy, because if one can get the higher experience of devotional service or contact with Krishna by the process, then he can follow the four regular principles, of which celibacy is the principal one. And if one is celibate, then he can control his mind and senses. Otherwise, it is not possible. So he has to practice austerity, celibacy, control of the mind and body, etc. And then he must be interested in tad viganartam sagurum eva bigachet samit pani strotriyam brahmanishta. He has to take to the interest into the transcendental subject matter. Because the impersonalists also, they get something of a higher taste, or at least freedom from the lower taste, and they also can follow the whole process of tapasya and brahmacharyam and samena cha, dhamena cha. But they may not have real interest in transcendental knowledge. As a matter of fact, their knowledge usually stops at realization of their identity as a spiritual being or their identification with the Paramatma. But to make real, to be initiated, one has to believe that Krishna is God, for instance, and that one is his servant. So for that, one has to surrender to Krishna's representative and be interested in hearing from him about Krishna. So Prabhupada also writes that one should accept the spiritual master not as a show, but with the idea of actually following his instructions. Not that the spiritual master is more or less like a movie star or an idol or something like that. You adore him, but you don't really follow his instructions. And at the same time, one should be strictly interested in transcendental subject matter. Not that it's a sideline, an interest, the armchair speculators, they read books about transcendence while they're sipping their coffee and smoking cigarettes. They have an interest in that, but they have an interest in many other things. So, if he actually has this desire to advance spiritually and to give up material life and is willing to undergo the austerities to do so, then he should take initiation. Because it's by initiation that he can learn how to seriously engage himself in the service of Krishna. Then he can come to the Madhyama Adhikari platform, and from the Madhyama Adhikari platform, it's possible to actually see things better, at least. One can see real categories. And from seeing real categories, one can know what to do to advance in spiritual life. The Kanista Adhikari, he, materially speaking, is quite elevated. He actually has quite a bit of knowledge. But he doesn't really know what to do to advance spiritually. He kind of misses the point. But the Madhyama Adhikari, for him, things are pretty clear, what to do to advance spiritually. For instance, Prabhupada said that in the Western world especially, but Western world means practically the whole world nowadays. If you go to India and Bombay and Delhi, it's hard to think that this is not the Western world. The Western world has traveled all the way around. Went past Australia back to India. So, Prabhupada said in the Western world, generally people are addicted to three things. One is illicit sex life. Second is fighting with each other. And third is mental speculation. In other words, lust, anger, and bewilderment, which all follow according to the Bhagavad Gita. So these qualities are inherent within the materialistic world. In the material world, these are the main qualities, modes of ignorance and passion. And even though one comes to the brahminical platform, still they may not be completely eliminated. But in order to come to the Madhyama Adhikari platform, one has to give these things up. In other words, give up the fighting propensity, give up the idea of speculating, coming up with a new one's own version of the philosophy. You know, something interesting to say. One hears Prabhupada's lectures, although he had many interesting things to say, but he didn't say new things all the time. He was always basically on the same points. Not that he didn't explain it from different angles, but it wasn't that one day, he told the story one way, and he illustrated some philosophy which was different from what Krishna said, in order to, bring some new interest into the field. A devotional life, he decided to come up with a new idea that you couldn't find anywhere else. No, the Prabhupada, generally he said the same, he just expanded whatever Krishna said. Matter of fact, if we read Prabhupada's purports, practically every paragraph we can think of a verse that the purport came from. And sometimes that's what the Prabhupada's purports were. They were just translation of verses. And it didn't embarrass him, that why wasn't he more creative or whatever. But that was actually Prabhupada's pride, that he just repeated what his spiritual master had to say. Matter of fact, if we listen to the Govinda album, then at the very beginning, which was, I remember first hearing it when it came out, like 1972 or something, the transcendental autocrat who's ever inviting, living anti-suit, associate with him in the transcendental abode. I couldn't understand how Prabhupada could have written such a thing, because I could hardly even understand the English is so elevated. And then I later found out that it came directly from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada's introduction to the Brahma Samhita. In the Western world, of course, you'd have to immediately quote, say that actually I'm just quoting from such and such person, but my ideas are about, this is my idea about it, this was his idea. The Prabhupada didn't feel like that at all. Matter of fact, if you go to India, they don't have copyright laws. So it's not just because everyone wants to steal everyone else's writing and print their books cheap, but it's also because people, they don't think that if you just repeat what someone else says, it's wrong. That's the material concept, especially if you're repeating spiritual life, spiritual knowledge. Then that's the glory, is if you can actually repeat what the person has said. The Brahmins, they're trained up how to actually repeat what their spiritual master is saying. They have to fast and go through austerities. Just as I once mentioned, that to chant one letter in the Sparsha alphabet, there are so many letters, but to chant, say, the letter A, ah, there were something like 19 ways of chanting it. And through the only way one would be able to chant the letter A properly, one would have to be born in a brahminical, by samskara, the parents undergoing garbhadang samskara, being born in such a situation, and then being trained up since childhood, only eating certain foods, going through certain austerities, and then learning from someone who knew how to chant that sound vibration, that letter, in the 19 different ways. And if one could do that, there is so much potency to that type of chanting, that subtlety of chanting, that one could practically control the material world. So the Brahmins were actually quite powerful. And they did it because they learned how to hear and repeat exactly what their spiritual master had said. And in the Western world, in the Western conception, you don't want to hear from anyone else. You just want everyone else to hear you. So since you've not really heard from anyone else, it's wondering what you're actually producing. It's just some, you know, unintelligible sounds come out that you're trying to impress people with. So here, that is emphasized that once you learn how to surrender and just chant what one has heard, then one comes to the second class platform. If he gives up the fighting propensity, gives up these other propensities, then he can actually make friends with the devotees and hear from them. And if one can hear from them, then he can repeat what they've said. And if he can repeat what they've said properly, he can hear it also and make advancement. So then the next thing that's emphasized here, which we'll have to go over tomorrow, I guess, is the chanting of the holy name, which just logically follows, since that is the process for advancing. So by chanting nicely and following the process, then one is gradually elevated to the position where one can understand that Krishna and his name are non-different. So I think I'll stop here. Is there any questions? That's our second, that's our first major. Yeah, so when we get it by experience, you find out after a while, when you criticize other devotees, they start criticizing you. So you get a nice experience. You learn rapidly what it's like to be criticized. So if you don't mind being criticized, then I guess you don't mind criticizing others. So generally you find out that it's when you get another experience, namely when you praise the devotees and please them, then you get another type of experience. So when you develop a taste for that, then you figure, I don't have enough time to criticize everyone because I'm too busy to try and please them and to glorify them. So the actual injunction is not to avoid criticizing the devotees, but the real injunction is to praise them. So once we get some tendency like that, therefore we accept the spiritual master and we spend our time praising him just to get a little experience like that. And then later on, when we're more advanced and inspired, we start praising other devotees. Not only do they appreciate it, but we also become inspired to advance in devotional service in that way. Because after all, when we go back to the spiritual world, then there's nothing but devotees. You can't take a break from the devotees' association. Because even if you go home, your house is a devotee. And if you go into your room, the room is a devotee. You lie down in your bed, it's a devotee too. And they keep on talking to you about Krishna. So if you don't like to hear about Krishna, you go insane in the spiritual world. You can't escape him. You look in the mirror, you see Krishna. And the mirror starts talking to you about Krishna. You brush your teeth and they're chanting Hare Krishna. The brush is chanting Hare Krishna. So we might as well get used to appreciating the devotees because that's all there are, at least in the spiritual world. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grantaraj, Nectar of Instruction, Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.